This is a podcast from Minute Media.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Hello, 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 and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. Rich Hobbs here for a blockbuster episode of Wolves Fancast, part of the 90 Min Football Family Network. There is so much to go through today, guys. We're going to try and keep it short, sweet, concise, which is exactly why I've brought Stu Hall and Kim on today. How are we both after yesterday's victory?
Was it? Still?
Recovering? Still?
The perfect answers.
See, this is the difference between Stu and I at the moment.
You're lovely professional.
Always a professional.
The traditional fan cast squash.
Yeah, throughout the month of January, Kim's professional.
Wait till Feb.
There's going to be some boozy recordings. Before we get cracking into the game, because as I said, there's so many kind of key highlights, parts about the game. It was the first time Wolves played at Brentford's new stadium. Stu, you were there. What did you think? Because it seems... I'm going to go for quirky. break us through. How was the away day for you?
The place, I mean, we've been to Griffith Park loads of times, maybe three or four times, so we knew it's only 15 minutes away, so the area is still the same. You really don't know it's there at all. It's so hidden between them train tracks, and I mean, it's pretty out there. We went to Uxbridge, so we didn't drink in the many pubs that Billy recommended on the previous show last week.
Actually like a lot of pubs around there, the ground?
There's loads. There's absolutely loads. I mean, there's, like you said, that in different directions, you can walk 5 minutes and then there's like a cluster about four or five, and then you move a bit further out. Within, say, half hour's walking distance, there probably is about 25 pubs altogether.
Wow.
But we went to Uxbridge, and we clocked in at 10 to 10, as you do. So we had back on the bus at half one. So it was just steady 7 points in there. It was all right. So by the time we got to the ground, it was, thought, well, let's see what it's all about. And we parked up. And it's a bit like how Wembley is now, where you got all these massive tower blocks and everything. You don't know anything's there until you walk down the road. And then there's this, like, you walk down these steps and there's a stadium there. How have they even managed to get it in this small, tiny area? And then you look at it from the outside and it looks, okay, it looks fine. It's like a big, like, you know, how, at the new Cardiff ground, it's got that kind of grey cladding outside and it looks a bit terrible. It's like that, but not as bad. But it doesn't look like a ground. And then you walk in and there's stairs going up to different places and nothing's, it's not very well signposted really, but say it's quirky is a massive understatement. It's the weirdest place I've ever been to in my entire life.
Screens as well?
Yeah.
Like on your photo, like I didn't get what those screens were for, in the ground.
Yeah, basically, for some mad reason, they've got their big screens on the halfway line above the stand. So if you look at it opposite the camera, there's a big screen on the top of the roof. Not in the corners or behind the goal like normal places. It's on top of the roof on the halfway line, and it's the same for the main stand where the cameras are. So if you're up towards the back of the stands behind the goal, you can't see them because the stand overhangs. So they've got these little tellies across the top.
Oh,
it's a genius solution, really, because, I mean, the screen...
Don't put the screens where the main screens where they did, but, you know.
Yeah, well, they could do that. But because you had now sun beaming down on the screen and it was literally just in front of you, it was so much easier. Like, when anything happened, just look up rather than, like, looking far away or trying to squint because you're too pissed. It was a really, really clever idea. I don't know. I think I know that Ajax have done it, like, for their screen's behind the goal. There's a smaller screen on the back of that one. And a few places have done it like that. But individual tellies along the back of the away end. And I think it looked like it was for their end as well. Really clever. And all the quirky bits where the stand is all like chopped in half and the corners are all strange. There's like gull wings kind of holding it all together. When you actually look from outside, you realise why it's like that. It's not because they've got no space. And they've utilised absolutely every inch possible. And fair play to them. But it is still weird. I mean, we was on the upper tier. So row 26 or wherever it was. And to get there, we had to go up some steps. But it's all metal stairs as well. So it's all banging and you can make a proper racket in there. But if you go up the one way, then you come to the upper concourse. If you go down another vomitory, let's get it right. If you go down another one of them, you end up back downstairs again. Even though you've just gone down, it doesn't make any sense. But it was really, really well laid out for what it was. And how low the roof was, and because they had all the beams and everything underneath rather than top, you made a proper racket in there, and I presume you could hear us all on the through the telly anyway.
Yeah. No,
yeah.
I mean, you usually do pick up the away fans more in fairness, but you could properly hear the Wolves fans on Saturday. Going to the starting lineup, bit of a surprise considering I don't think we'd heard much about Jimenez being injured. So Silva starts up top with Podence. Midfield three of Donk, Neves, Moutinho, and then, you know, same as it was against Southampton the week before. Kim, what did you think of the initial lineup? I mean, you know, sort of past, I guess, the surprise around Jimenez being out.
Yeah, obviously, as you said, it was a shock because it hadn't been publicised anywhere. And initially, I thought, oh, maybe it's COVID, and then. I think on Twitter I saw that it was reported Raul was injured. But honestly, I felt quite positive, generally, because I think we got overrun in the first fixture, didn't we, against Brentford in centre midfield. So it kind of made sense to put an extra body in there anyway. And then obviously with Podence and Silva playing up top, I was quite encouraged, basically because how well they played in the cup against Sheffield United. They linked up really well. I don't think you couldn't have asked for a different team than that. You know, Traore was never going to start with all of the rumours with Tottenham. And I don't think Trincao really has done enough to warrant a start. So, yeah, all in all, I couldn't see any problems with the lineup, and I was glad to see obviously Gomez as well start again. So yeah, no complaints from me.
Yeah, same, Stu. I think it felt very much, Kim sort of said, like lessons learned from the first time we played them with the midfield three.
Yeah, like she said, that's where we were dicked, well and truly, in that first game. So it was, and then Dunker does do that job well, and we'll obviously get into it, but I thought he did. He played really well as well. I mean, we've criticised him more than anyone else on here, I think, me and Kim. So, fair's fair. He came in, did the job that he was meant to do, and he did it really well. But yeah, the Raul thing was weird because, I mean, you always hear rumours and the little tinkerings on Twitter come through that, oh, something's happened to him, and there's been a fight or whatever. But there was nothing at all until the team came out. So, you know, hopefully it's nothing serious and no one's really said anything about it, which is weird. But yeah, like you said, Podence deserves his start now and he's kind of cemented himself in the team. I was confident anyway after last week and going into this, and how Brentford and Thomas Wank has been on about it all week. Oh, poor us against Man United. Well, he's clearly got a screw loose anyway. So if we put a bit of pressure on him, they're going to fold. And he did at the end, again.
Snapped. Well, I was going to say that we have got so much to build up to that crescendo of this podcast, ladies and gentlemen. As I say, the first half wasn't massively great. I mean, there was two big stoppages that didn't help. I mean, But the one that I made while I was watching the game was, I think I described it on Twitter as Brentford being a bit Stoke-like in terms of how direct they were, the focus on these big throw-ins. Obviously, they play in red and white stripes. That was my cue. But I kind of moved away from that and thought they're a bit more like Huddersfield when they came up. And I think it might just be because David Wagner reminds me a bit of Thomas Franks. But there was something like, yeah, just, I know, it's something quite, this can sound really dickheadish and it's not meant to, and almost elitist. There's almost something quite un-Premier League-y about that in terms of that style of play. Because at Molineux, they weren't that direct, surely. But then I think I look at, remember the goals, and actually they did kind of go quite high and fast with it, but especially the throw-ins, that was another level, right?
I think at Molineux, though, didn't they? I think they have got a fair few injuries, which has meant that I think a lot of their play, they lost a lot of quality in their first 11. But as you said, watching the game back, and I've had to just even though I wasn't at the game, so I did watch it yesterday, but just sort of sitting back and just re-watching, it's interesting now to just focus on how direct they actually were. Every time they got the ball, it was, to be fair, a positive pass forward, but a lot of those balls were like long, hopeful balls. Like, and even in the first half, although we didn't play as well as the second half, we never looked in real danger. They were literally just the only danger was obviously their long throws, where any team can almost look in trouble. But with the keeper that we've got, you always felt that we weren't going to, and the defence obviously, we weren't going to concede a soft goal. But yeah, I do agree. I think they are pretty anti-football. They are.
I mean, it is no surprise, because watching them in the Championship, they did play like that a lot of the times. It's very functional. It's not like...
Not that much, though, Stu. Like, I'm sure they literally used to pass the ball a little bit more. Like,
oh, no, this is what I'm saying. They know when to mix it up. They're not like they were under Dean Smith when he was there and it was all on the butt on the floor and pass it around all nice triangles. They've got a bit of both about them. And I think, like you said, because of the injuries, they've kind of had to play to the strength of the players that they've got on the pitch. And that's meant that they've gone a bit more direct than they probably want to do. So... yeah, it was it wasn't pretty to watch, though, and that collision was bad. It was a bad one.
I mean,
you heard it again, and after what happened with Raul, it was like, oh no.
Yeah, and I think it was interesting because it came from like a bit of a succession of pressure that they had, and Saar did it a couple of times that game, and we showed the great clip of him like barging past players to get to the edge of a box as quickly as possible. But that the incident came from him breaking to the edge of a box, and you know. Getting it long, because we'd had a break about a couple of minutes before with Semedo bursting through. But yeah, as soon it sounds awful, isn't it? Because when you're watching, you're like, you can see what's going to happen, and there's nothing anyone in the stadium can do about it. And you know, it caused a big delay, and both players had to get sort of subbed off through a concussion protocols, which, you know, is however dismissive we are of Brentford and things like that, actually it's still not particularly great to watch. But then there was a second stoppage of play about 5-10 minutes later, the attack of the drone, Stu.
Excellent work.
Thank you I mean, again, apparently those Premier League regulations now that all players have to leave the pitch, which I'm sure Stu knows full all full
inside and out. Yeah.
Now, I don't think I've seen anything like that at a Wolves game before, where it's had to be paused. Right, I've got two questions for you. So, I'm going to do one for Kim and one for Stu. So, Stu, what was conspiracy theory? Why was the drone over there?
I've seen no idea. Even me and Luke, maybe it was trying to vaccinate people, who knows?
Oh no, not this one again.
It was just bizarre. And it's not, people have said it's a Premier League rule. It's not, it's a FIFA rule. It's just, it's there in the rules of the game. So it's happened twice that I can that I know of that I found out later. I couldn't remember any other time ever for it happening before. But to be fair, let's go. The PA announcer was superb at Brentford. He said after the two players went off, and he said that is two concussion injuries, two concussion okay. substitutes. I thought, okay, that was nice to know. And then as soon as the ref took the players off, he said there is an illegal drone overhead. The players have gone in for safety reasons. Okay. No confusion, no pissing about like we would have inevitably have at Molyneux. It would have all gone tits up and everyone would get mad with each other and people would started arguing. But now he come out clear as day, exactly what was happening. And then everyone was kind of just standing around looking at each other. I think, well, what is it? The same thing. What is it doing here? Why is it here? Why is it at Brentford and not moving? And then it disappeared.
Yeah, because like, I mean, we've seen it with like planes going overhead and stuff like that with banners. And I can see that, but with a drone, just one drone. So my question to you, Kim, is let's be honest, drones aren't inexpensive. Like you can't, like we can all carve, I say we can all buy one, but you know, they're very accessible, right? Which Wolves player do you think is the best drone pilot and which is do you think is the worst?
See, I knew that this question was going to come up, weirdly. So I've had a little bit of a think. I think the obvious answer would be Neves, wouldn't it? Because you'd want someone who's got that, like, pinpoint accuracy. Yeah, that needs to... But then I think it's got to be, like, the worst one would be, like, Traore, surely.
Yeah. I think
because he can be a bit wayward in his...
Yeah. Control. I think Saul would be a menace.
He would be too heavy-handed.
Saar is flying his like really close, like you know, about 3 inches above like the canal, and just like bombing it and just seeing what happens.
Yeah. You know that now we've got 2 weeks off. He's going to have one
did you see his Instagram post around exactly. the drone? Yeah,
the drone, not God.
Yeah. If his wife can buy him a karaoke machine, and then that be a thing, let's all put pressure on her to buy him a drone next and see what happens. See, he was at the training ground taking photos in Gemma's video on Friday, so he's already got an interest in technology. Let's make it happen. Come on, Josh, get done.
I'm on board. I am on board.
Do you know why I read though that the drone it was obviously could be a security risk, but it's near Heathrow, isn't it? The ground.
Yeah.
So there were. I did read something about that's what it could be to do with. I don't really know.
Well, it could have anything. It could be a bomb. It could have gas in there. It could have guns on it. You could have any, or it could be illegally streaming Premier League rights, which is probably more likely.
That's let's be honest. That's why they were so keen to stop.
Yeah. You
know? Rather than the bomb. Yeah.
They don't want people sharing fan driven content. That's all I'm saying, you know. 110k views that Raul video got. 110,000. Anyway, so first half, apart from those two kind of incidents, was a bit muchness for me. Like, so we had a couple of good breaks. There was the chest and volley from Silva as well, which I thought was a lovely bit of work from him. Second half rolls in. Playing overhead and we score and I think quite very close into the start of second half 48 minute just beautiful honestly. It's like his foot transformed into a paintbrush. He just stroked it in. I've lost words for how brilliant Moutinho's been the last few weeks.
I couldn't tell you how many times I've rewatched that goal. Like, honestly, it's just so good. So, like, even not just the finish, but the amount. How many passes was it? Was it like 60?
11? Or
no, it was more than that.
Oh, the first one. Yeah. It was. That's the thing. I mean, the coach put the second one up there as well. I think that was 16 or 17 as well. It's the Bruno ball effect where, and the more interesting thing is that the fans have completely bought into it all. And there's been no, oh, get it forward. I mean, there might be at home games where they walk among us. But especially at United and yesterday, there was no kind of, okay, let's scream and moan about the most basic things. It was, okay, let's be patient. Let's keep the ball. Let's create the space. If there ain't none, go back, try again. Everyone's on board with it. And it makes a massive difference because you can see it on the pitch because they're playing without any pressure whatsoever. And it shows.
Yeah. I mean,
the movements, like lately, has been the passing and movement has been top draw. And I can really feel now, like, you know how obviously we've been great defensively, but going forward, we're really, really improving, like game by game. And I don't feel like now, like, oh God, we're going to have to try and nick a goal, but are we going to score? Because I feel like at least now the goals are coming from almost could come from anywhere on the pitch, as opposed to before where we're like, God, Raul needs to get his shooting boots on because we're just screwed if he doesn't score. It doesn't feel like that kind of vibe anymore.
Yeah, I completely agree, Kim. It almost feels like a when, not if now, where it's like, you know, oh, well, we can't really hope we get lucky from a corner and say snods one in, whereas actually you say the defence is playing well, they're getting on the score sheet, our midfielders are contributing now, which we've never had consistently, and the attackers seem to be chipping in a bit more than they have done.
And the wing-backs have been unreal. Even my mate Semedo was unreal yesterday. Yeah, I'll say it. He was unreal.
I was going to say, one of the things I like most about the Moutinho goal is that it's got a 1-2 in it. Come on. You don't see enough of them. Like, it was a proper classic 1-2, wasn't it? It was a pass and mover. And the way I see it is that's like the first, like, move, and probably the only move, like, a lot of people learn on a football pitch, isn't it, in terms of creating space? Because, like, things like old passing in triangles and things like that's, like, a little bit more advanced. But anyone who's played Sunday League football or youth football growing up, we all do it where, like, you're warming up before a game and you have someone, like, you pass the ball into the coach and he knocks it back and you're doing that 1-2. Do you do it in a game? Never. But actually, that's it in the game situation. And you had Donk creating the movement further down to, like, stretch the play, and he knocks it back to Semedo. Oh, just fantastic, fantastic. You know, hit him and Neves yesterday again. And Donk as well. I think, you know, although, you know, he kind of quietly just got on with his job and allowed Neves and Moutinho just... You know,
at least he actually made, like, some forward runs and actually contributed something, whereas I think the last few games it's like, what has he actually done? But at least in the build up to the goals, he was making those forward runs and at least contributing something. Whereas, but the thing is, Neves and Moutinho were the ones that absolutely run the game and won the game for us.
Yeah, I think I saw something saying how, like, fewer touches he's had this season compared to last season. And I think I sort of initially framed it as that's a bad thing. And then kind of go, actually, no, it's just because he's got more confidence and that touches that little bit more special in terms of creating him the space at the moment. And, you know, just everything about his game at the moment from a midfielder's point of view, they highlighted on Match of the Day, which I was a bit annoyed with, if I'm going to be honest, because for a game with so much, particularly second half, you know, start about fourth in the running order. How's Man United getting first? Joke. It was an actual joke. And then the only bit of highlighting they do is on the Neves goal. Don't mention it for Traore one. You know, anything like that, no. Barely even a whisk on Moutinho's, but that'll be the mainstream media for you.
Let's speculate on
defund the BBC.
Well, yeah, well, there, defund Jonathan Pearce, because unless Fabio Silva's run over his wife, then... I've never heard a bloke attack a young child as much since Rolf Harris got sent down. But he was absolutely... Why was he having a go at him for? What was wrong with him?
It felt borderline personal.
But it wasn't just that. Have you watched the Sky Sports highlights?
Yeah.
And I don't even know who the commentator is. It's like it was a Cockney guy. And he was just like, what's Fabio Silva? Like, he was like attacking Fabio Silva. It was like... And that everyone has to bring up that price tag, and it does my head in. He did well, Silva, again yesterday.
Yeah, he played really well.
Yeah. Held the ball up really, really well and had a couple of... There was one, obviously, the chance where it just went past the post and he was offside. But there was also when we just scored the first and then we went down... We went down on the attack again and he laid the ball off and I can't remember to who now, but then he nearly had it back and then the defender just took it off his toe because he was about to put it in.
Yeah.
There's no chance that he hasn't improved. He's looking good and I think that he does need a few more starts and he will put the ball in the net.
Yeah, like I thought yesterday, it was just a solid game. Like, it was a shame he didn't get on the score sheet and things like that. We didn't create like lots and lots of chances for him, but he you know, didn't sort of stand out as a poor performance by any stretch of the imagination. Which to say, sort of, I think it might just be a case of people's external expectation rather than even our own at this point. Because I think all Wolves fans are pretty much on his side at this point. I understand he's still improving, but can see that, you know, from a year on, he's improved. And if that's the, you know, we're the ones who pay to see him week in, week out. And, you know, yeah, he's, what, I think it's like 40 appearances, 4 goals or something. But, you know, I'd love to see a minutes to game ratio.
Yeah, it's
because I don't think it's going to be anywhere near as poor as 1 in 10. But,
no, and that comment that, oh, Semedo didn't pass to him because he's got no confidence in him. What? When does he
ridiculous comment? And he's made 50 appearances, they said, I think, on those highlights.
Yeah, 50.
But how many of those has he actually started? Because it ain't a high number.
Or how many of those did he start last season when he was thrown in the deep end in a not particularly productive side? And I do think it helps him having Podence next to him, and it helps having... Yeah. That midfield three who are pushing on as well, because he's got bodies around him, and I don't quite know at this point how well Silva would function if he had two players, like two wingers next to him. I think having Podence sort of nipping in around him is really helpful for his overall game as well. But yeah, just for Silva slander's not on. Not having it at all. Next little incident, Stu, were you sweating when you saw the red card come out for Totti, or did you think, did you have your convictions secure in VAR? Because I watched it live, I've watched it back. It's just a solid yellow, right?
Yeah. I mean, everyone was just looking. I mean, everyone was just looking around in absolute disbelief. And what the hell's he going on with it? I mean, how is that a red card? And it wasn't like a case of okay, it's one of them. Maybe he said something afterwards or whatever, but. As soon as it got, the longer it took, and you think, okay, this is clearly going to get reviewed now, and it's going to be rescinded. And you think, and then obviously you're not fit to referee. It's never been more apt because it was a ridiculous decision. It wasn't even like it looked bad because it didn't look bad. And the worst thing about the whole thing was he stopped a perfectly good Brentford move to send him off when he could have played advantage for them, and we'd have been in a ton of trouble. So from a Brentford point of view, I mean, I talked to a guy on Twitter this morning about this. From their point of view, he ruined a good move. I mean, yeah, they could have scored, and he could have gone back and done it later, but he didn't. Oh, he just in his little way. I mean, we've had things with Peter Banks before, but how ridiculous he is and never lets things go. It just seemed like, oh, this is an opportunity. I'm going to send him off.
You could see, couldn't you, from the when I was watching it as well. There's no, his leg wasn't high, dangerous at all. You could see it was almost on the floor. And I was literally screaming at the TV at the time. Like, oh my God, that has to be rescinded. Like, and I wasn't 100% sure it was going to be, but like, there's no way in God earth that was a red card. And I don't understand how the ref would think that is a red, like what went through his mind to think, yeah, it was reckless.
See, what I don't like around VAR with stuff like this is, yeah, it's a foul. Don't get me wrong. It's a clear yellow, in my opinion. If a ref's got any doubts, I don't quite understand why he can't either wait for further instruction or if he feels actually there's a need to pause the game because a serious foul's been committed, just say serious foul's been committed and then ask for it, rather than this whole rigmarole of right, red, and then, oh, I need to kind of put my tail between my legs now that I've actually realised I've made a mistake and eat a bit of humble pie. And the whole kind of structure around, you know, we have it for penalties, don't we? We let it play on. We have the same for offside. You let it play on. And, you know, as you know, penalties is a better example because you don't have to use four of scoring a goal like Traore. But, like, you let it play on just in case, and then you can refer back to it. Where it's like, just do it for this as well. It doesn't make that much of a difference, apart from you lose a level of credibility. Whereas you'd gain more if you just sort of said, we need to check this just in case.
But that's the thing. He could have done that. Yeah. He could have done it. And if the move had petered out, as soon as the ball's dead, it would have been VAR checking professional foul. That's what it would have been. Because he'd already played the advantage anyway. And then realised that he had to send him off. But it was just... He just lost his head. Completely lost his head, made the wrong decision and cocked it up.
Yeah, the irony of it, it actually benefited Brentford in the long run. Because I am right in thinking that they did score from the free kick. Yeah. In my head, it feels like it should be sort of two separate things. But I think because of the way, I think the sending off was in the 68th minute and then Tony scored in the 71st. So like a sort of 3 minutes later to kind of get it all going. I mean... It's a bit frustrating because Wolves have been so strong from free kicks, but as we've kind of already talked about Brentford being a bit direct and knowing kind of what they're doing.
Do you know what's weird? Do you know what is weird? I want to know, there was two blokes unmarked from that free kick, and because you know it's going in, I was watching those two when I was just re-watching the game, and I did wonder, was that tactically what we were meant to be doing, or... have they just lost two men? Because it was clear that there was two men overrun, and albeit, but I'm not sure if we were just gambling on the fact that, well, that's a tight angle, you're not going to score from there. Or I think it was it Donk who was just lost?
Yeah, Donk was the nearest one to him. Whether it was his man or not, I think only Bell. Yeah.
Disappointing, wasn't it, really? But a good finish.
That was my first thought. I thought, what the hell, what is he doing? As you can see Tony peeling him off. I thought, what is he doing there? And then by the time he's realised it's too late. I mean, more weird was the fact that Ivan Tony's hair's gone.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
How long was that?
That surprised me. I wasn't quite ready for that.
It was still there against Man United in the week. So
how was it?
Been, yeah, so it was. That took a bit of getting used. So I thought, who is that? And then you try and see the numbers, which is half impossible when after so many beverages. But you kind of guess that
stripes,
it is him.
And it's always harder to see it on stripes.
Yeah, they should have a shield again or a patch. Bring that back. If you're going to wear stripes, then it's your own fault.
Yeah. Do you prefer stripes or hoops or stripes, out of curiosity? I don't know why I'm like going off on a massive tangent when there's still like four things I want to talk about.
Stripes might remind me of West Brom, so I'll go hoops.
I mean, hoops is like
Celtic.
And I was going to say Hoops served us well before he left. No, we used to in our PE shirt at school. It was navy blue, and it had a big band, a big stripe around the middle, which was bright orange. So it was reversible. I presume they still do that. I mean, they probably don't know, but so it's, for that reason alone, stripes. No, Hoops, not stripes.
Hips, not stripes. Good to know. I was going to say, dragging it back to a point that I so lovingly pulled us off, it did sort of feel like, when I kind of saw it going, you know what I mean? I kind of initially sort of thought, oh, there must be sort of some blocking or whatever, because it's come a long way for him to volley it as well. I think it was just like...
He just had that amount. He had so much time, didn't he, though?
Yeah. Like, it's not like he's, like, peeled off or whatever. He's kind of stayed on the back post all the time for, you know, their most prominent goal scorer. Seems a bit bonkers, so I don't quite know what went on there, unless they didn't want to lose a bit of defensive line. And I guess balance of play over 70 minutes, you could argue, you know what, 1-1's a relatively fair score. But, you know, Wolves are better. And we went ahead, thanks to Ruben Neves. And again, we've already talked about how good his performance was. And I don't think this goal's got enough credit, even though how, you know, how much I wax lyrical about Patino's goal. Again, the passing, the build-up, the patience, and then the work that Neves did, you know, taking the touch, creating that little extra space for himself and not, you know, rushing the finish as well. Fantastic.
That ball from Pedence as well.
Yeah.
That underrated pass. And then to just literally pass it around our own box and then Neves to put it in like that. The only thing that I would say is I think the goalie's got to be disappointed a little bit. I think if Jose Sarr had conceded that, I don't know, I think he was a bit slow in going down. I don't know what Stu thinks.
It seemed to take an age to go in. It was almost like in slow motion. I don't know if he was unsighted. I know what you mean, because it didn't seem that hard a shot to save.
It was just precise. It wasn't precisely in the corner, though, wasn't it?
Yes, and when you look at it from behind, it does bend outside the post first.
Hmm.
So
it was very
it is Arsenal as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't call it a howler, but it's savable, isn't it? I'd be disappointed if Wolves had conceded it. I mean, Thomas Franks was. He made it seem like he was very praiseworthy as Moutinho's goal, although he didn't think it was a big chance, which I thought was interesting, you know.
Deluded, that man. He's deluded, isn't he?
Honestly, like, I didn't want to listen to the post-match stuff, but I thought, you know what, I feel like getting wound up. So I did listen to it, and yeah, he said, oh, well, we should have done a lot better. But I think the thing that I enjoyed was, like, say, how we moved it across the edge of their box until we found the space. Because, yeah, like, if we, you know, it comes to Ait Nouri, and then it goes to Moutinho, and on a different day, maybe let's say if Raul's playing or Huang's playing, for example, he might just try and, you know, dummy it and play like a little sidewall pass and just open up that point. But it goes on to Neves. Again, he might have just got, you know, gone for a pass instead on a different day. And it kind of felt just, you know what, that's just pressure building. And it felt like it was intense. It wasn't, you know, if that's 10, 15 yards further back, it's a bit more methodical. But to have our two centre midfielders on the edge of the opposition box, Donk's already pushed forward as well. I think Donk's basically on the right wing at this point. You know, we're camped in this box. So great, great all round. And what we thought would be the icing on the cake, another Traoré goal. But it kind of turned out it wasn't, because he was a half foot offside or something ridiculous. Stu, I know you're not Traoré's biggest fan, but the scenes after he scored, in terms of everyone hugging him, and the fact he ran straight to Bruno as well. Yeah. Oh, that gets to me. You know, there's no, like, you know, smashing the corner flag. And I did find that a little bit touching. And it's like, no, 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 not today, Satan.
I mean, he's obviously well-liked, and which makes the whole thing why he won't commit even more weird. But let's not get into that again. I've been kind of accustomed now to when it's close to not celebrate, because you don't want egg on your face. It didn't even look close. Like, when he said VAR checking offside, he was like, for who?
Yeah.
I'm convinced he's on. I can't see how he's not on.
And he worked hard to stay onside. That's what I really liked about it. It wasn't that it was almost like through random chances. You could see him holding his run to keep in line. And, all right, you know what? It happens, whatever. But it always draws back for me the old, that the rules aren't kind of fit for purpose on it. That's not what offside was designed to prevent. And I know it's binary. I know. And I'm the biggest believer in, actually, you know what? Look, if you're offside, you're offside. It is kind of one or the other. But it's still like a bit crushing when it does happen to you. Particularly when, like, you know, he's someone who kind of does wear his heart on his sleeve a bit, and you can see about confidence. And I just thought, you know what, he gets a goal there, that's another 2 million on the price tag. But
it was a great finish as well, wasn't it? Like, you could really, he wouldn't have put that in a few weeks ago, but since he got his goal last week?
Yeah, it was last week.
Last week, you know, his confidence must have gone sky high again, so it's quite disappointing. And I feel like he was quite emotional, which means I feel like he's played his last game for Wolves.
Yeah, but did you feel like it was hugs goodbye rather than, you know, congratulations? I mean, one thing we've not, we talked a little about the start, guys, but Wolves were a bit of a darker arts, a bit of shithousery throughout the game. It wasn't just in the final throws of it, as Brentford bombarded on it. Not going to lie, I know that a lot of fans, particularly when we play away, will say we go down easily and stuff like that. But we played Brentford at their own game yesterday, Stu, didn't we?
It was glorious. You know, I hate it. I don't like it whatsoever. But against them, after what they did, and the hypocrisy coming out of...
just Frank's doing
he's
the just, pie.
He's just an arsehole. Let's just get it right. He's just a complete twat. He's got no class. It's not just against us. It's been every time they've lost this season, he's been like this. Against everyone. And you think, why? Just shut up. Just shut up. You're lucky to have a job in the Premier League anyway. You wouldn't have got one if you hadn't got promoted. So have a bit of class and just keep quiet. Because he's not helping anyone. You're just making yourself look like a fool. I mean, Mourinho could get away with it because he was winning all the time. Him? No. So when we were playing them at their own game, winding them up, they were falling for it. They were getting wound up, and it was brilliant. And Jose saw.
I thought he was going to get sent off towards the end, and I was like, please just kick the ball. Like, you know, when he got booked for time waste, and then he continued to be really slow, and I was getting a bit like, oh my God, just kick the ball, Jose, now. Like, because he was getting a bit wound up himself, wasn't he? You could tell.
He's an absolute heel, and I love it. I mean, yeah, scenes at the end. From this, all right, some of the players are kind of giving each other a bit of an argument. Seeing Gian Martino, like, trying to scrum up to a big centre-half like Pontus Janssen, I approve of him sort of giving it. But then Franks comes over, and, you know, I stand by it, of why Neves gets involved, because he starts mocking his celebration. Like, we can't show the video on YouTube for anyone who's watching it on there, for, you know, copyright reasons or whatever. But you see him turn around, sort of having a bit of an argument with Martino. And then Franks, you can see him going like, with his finger to his head. And Neves,
I didn't
like,
see that.
No, yeah. And then Neves sort of storms round and starts having a go. And you can see Neves go, that was me. And then him turn around and like 2 seconds later, he goes, takes a deep breath and goes, then looks at the away fans and just goes, come on. I was like, yes, Neves, yes. Have my heart, sir. Have my heart.
I agree with Stu so much on this, though. I hate it when our players, like, go down. Like, what? Who was it? Who went down? Sace, when he got poked in the eye. And I was like, and I was like, don't know. I hate this. But against Brentford, honestly, I was all for it. I was literally, I even tweeted it. I was like, inject this into me. I absolutely love it. So no problems yesterday with me. I was just like, stay down.
I mean, I was going to say, my thing with Franks is that it's your first season in Premier League, and sometimes it's not just the battles you have on the pitches, but the battles you have on the pitch with the media. And a few times this season, right, there's winding up away fans and things like that. And the opposition. But things like at the end of the game yesterday, if you can't throw your toys out of a pram, people will start to remember that, and the narratives change around newly promoted teams. And Brentford have got a lot of praise first half of this season, and rightly so, whatever. They're not in Norwich's position, for example. But the tide will turn if you keep doing stuff like that in the media, and that's when you start to lose your job. And that's when the plucky defeat you have against Man United, they don't feel so plucky anymore because of how you act. And if you compare that to someone like Nuno, who for three seasons of the Premier League was smiley, charismatic with everybody, and arguably shouldn't have been considered for a job at the likes of Spurs, gets it, and even to a degree left Spurs on good enough terms in the grand scheme of things. And I think that's going to stick with me around Franks, is that I don't know how long you can act at this level like that, unless you win stuff like the likes of Klopp, for example.
Well, his actions against Man United had already been picked up by the Ramble and Totally Football Show. So, and before anyone pedantically attacks you for it, it's Frank, not Franks.
Ah, sorry.
So, hungry like the wolf, I'm getting in there before you do this week.
It's like the whole Chris Wood or Chris Woods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cannot stand it when people say that, though. Wood.
I mean, people call me Richard Hobb often enough. Or is it Knob? One of you. got to love a bit of self-deprecating humour, haven't you? But, yeah, go on, Stu, your point.
I ain't that excited. no, he's... Yeah, you're right. I think the whole Brentford loving is kind of coming to the fore now, where people are seeing through it all, and it's not actually... The whole, I think Leeds kind of got away with it to an extent because of Bielsa and how mad he is, and how they still continue to play the same way every week, despite having no players, and they still do it all the time. Fair's fair, but I think they kind of got away with it to an extent. Brentford are pushing it a bit now, and he's got to reel it in. I mean, I'm guessing that's a one game touchline ban now, when we come back. So he just needs to grow up.
Do you know what? It's an agenda. It's Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher and Sky Sports who literally, they love the Friday night Brentford show, don't they? You know, the amount of games Brentford have been on a Friday night, like with the crowd in the background, and like, it's like it's their cup final every single Friday. And they're just stoked.
Do you know what my theory is on this in terms of why this, you say it's true, why it seems to start, it's starting to turn a little bit, and why fans like us are saying they're a bit, they're not our sort of football team for this division. Because we've all played them once.
Mm.
We're past halfway through the season. So we've all kind of, you build up a picture, don't you? And we watch enough like either fan content, like this, or more kind of whole league coverage to pick up on sort of stuff like that. But yeah, wasn't great. And they say if you don't have the personality, like, yeah, you can only get away with stuff like that on two fronts. One, if you win stuff. Two, if you've got a bit of personality. So like, I'm thinking like Neil Warnock, for example, who, because the scenes are sort of slightly reminiscent of, you know, when we beat Cardiff in terms of Warnock on the pitch and stuff like that. But actually, if you don't have a little bit of personality about you, which I don't really see from Franks anyway, yeah, going to be interesting. But a lot of the team did play very well on Saturday, yet again. I mean, in terms of man of the match and who did well, I mean, I've picked out four who I thought were standouts, which was basically, you know, most of our across the middle, Matinho, Neves, Aitnori, Semedo. Anyone else standouts for yourselves?
So I've written down here the obvious, obviously Matinho, Neves run the game and essentially won the game for us. However, I have written down Semedo. Honestly, I know. He's actually getting really good at making dangerous runs now, instead of just like hugging the touchline and just being in the way. And also, Totti Gomez was, honestly, he was a brick wall.
He nearly made it into my lovely man of the match graphic, but out of laziness and me not having the photo in time, I didn't. But yeah, I thought again, apart from the, you know, it wasn't his fault, he nearly got sent off in a way. But yeah, didn't put a foot wrong yet again.
No,
it was insane.
I think that goes for Kilman and Cody as well. They didn't do anything wrong. They just did their jobs properly. And they were just solid and steady, which you, is what you just expect it to be now. And, I mean, I really do hope that we do see Wolves' TikTok account with the Jazz Asar rugby trial in the morning. Because if anything needs to be used, it's that against them. Because that was... That deserves praise in itself, because I haven't seen that for since Jens Lehmann for Arsenal. That kind of insanity.
It was like a bit bonkers, and again, fully on board with it. I'm going to ask you both to drill down then. Who are we giving man of the match to?
Moutinho.
Neves for me.
I'm going to go Neves. But as I say, yet again, I mean, just time and time again this season, it's so lovely, isn't it? It's been such a hard choice. Right, guys, we're going to take a short break. We're going to chat a bit about transfers, a bit about Bruno, a bit about Troy, of course, we always have to, and a bit of Twitter corner. We will be back right after this short break. Hi, it's Richard from Wolves Fancast here. Just interrupting today's show before we get back to some questionable opinions and opinionated questions to talk to you a little bit about our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. They are a design agency that put you and your business first, from web design, logo and branding design and marketing. If you have any marketing needs, get in touch with them to find out how they can help you get it right. They are over at pixelyetimedia.com. Now let's get back to a show where we can give you some really forced wordplay, niche cultural references, and maybe even a bit of football talk. Hello and welcome back, everybody. So the first thing I wanted to talk about, and it came to me about this time yesterday after the game, and as I said, we're halfway through the season now and Wolves in a very good position in the league, and a thought occurred to me. And the thought is, Bruno Lage for manager of the season. You know what? I'm all in, guys. So I've put in my 3 points of why I think he should be manager of the season. So firstly, he's defined expectations. I don't think a lot of people necessarily thought that Wolves would do well this season. You know, I think nationally anyway, considering the... love Nuno had, and people surprised that we let him go at the end of last season, despite what we all thought in this room anyway. And even a lot of fans questioned his arrival. And I think probably a lot of people probably had us down to finish around, what, 12th? Would that be a fair assessment to say that we're probably looking at top of the bottom half or so? I think that was sort of the expectation of a lot of people nationally.
Yeah, mid-table. And I think most Wolves fans would probably...
Yeah.
I said 16th.
Yeah,
I said I'd take 16th purely on the fact that the defense is not good enough.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's my exact words.
Yeah. So, like, I think a lot of people sort of thinking, to be honest, we might even finish like the same position we were last season, but potentially play better football, and we're all okay with that as a building block. So the fact we're in the position we're in, with games in hand, like, you look at the table now and there's like breathing space between the teams behind us. We talked a couple of weeks ago about how condensed and compact it is. We've got a bit of breathing room all of a sudden. I know we've got a tough Feb, but, you know.
And those games today with Leicester drawing, Arsenal drawing, obviously Chelsea beating Tottenham, like, it's getting a bit like, oh my God, is this actually going to happen? But, Rich, to your point now on Bruno for manager of the season, I'm not sure we can answer this right now, can we?
I'm putting in my ballot now. What's a bit before we put it in the ballot? I'm like starting the campaign now and getting in early, just before anyone else gets on the hype train.
That you can be like, at the end of the season, I called it on the 23rd of Jan.
Exactly. You know, we're trendsetters here, I like to think. And I'm not even, look, you know, I'm a trendsetter because I'm not even wearing a jumper today, Stu.
I can't confirm or deny that.
I'm not, see? Not wearing it.
It still looks like a woolen T-shirt, though.
It does have a bit of texture on it. And yes, I might have been wearing a jumper earlier today that did get sick on it about an hour before recording, but you know, that's not the point. I'm still a trendsetter. Anyway, back to my point about Bruno. Yes, it's early. We're halfway through a season, but I think even if he went on the first 20 games, I think you could put in a really good case for him, because like we know where the likes of Guardiola sit in, you know, in football, but look at the managers who are kind of defying what they're doing and really sort of pushing forward. You know, my two other points, he's improving players. Again, and these were players which we thought had hit a ceiling. The likes of Cody, Neves to a degree. Semedo looks a different player. Aitnori, he has really lit a fire under him and really pushed one. And, you know, last but not least, Max Kilman. You know, if he's knocking on the door of the England squad now. And I don't know what it would have been like under another season of Nuno, for example. And lastly, and this kind of, I guess, we know Bruno Lage's background in terms of him liking to work with youth players and him being a player's coach. But he's done this with injuries to key personnel, the likes of Neto, the likes of Johnny as well, lest we forget. And he's done it without a lack of signings as well.
And they're not even his players, are they?
Yeah, he's come out.
Well, he's an unreal coach from what we've seen so far. In just like, because most of these players were playing under Nuno last season, and just devoid of ideas.
Yeah,
it is, and crazy. Like,
and you could even argue someone like Traore. I'd say he has improved this season, and we've got. Right, the end product might not be there as highly, but think of those first few games of the season when he was playing left wing and really showing something, and he wasn't doing that all the time last season, and he'd go missing. So, for me, I'd be interested to hear who other people think should be manager of the season, who, I say, might not have, you know, might not have been able to sign a £100 million player who was essentially a waste of money. in Man City, but who else should be manager for, could be manager of the season at this point? David Moyes, I think we're potentially better.
West Ham are a very good team though.
Yeah, and very good team,
a very good job.
And you can see the progression they've kind of made under Moyes from last season as well, and a continuation of that. But I don't think there's a lot between Wolves and West Ham, as we showed by beating them earlier this season.
Yeah, I don't think there's. I think David Moyes, to give him his proper talk.
David Moyes.
Yeah, I think him and probably Vieira as well, for what he's revitalised Palace, who are dead and buried for the vast majority of people, to turn that squad around with again. He's had a bit of money, but again, it looks like very good coaching on the whole.
Yeah.
And they're actually a good team to watch now, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
before, I was like, watching Palace is painful. Now they're actually quite, I don't mind watching them, actually.
Yeah. All right, the way I see it, so at the moment, we are, 3 points with 2 games in hand behind West Ham. If we get on level points with them, I think you could argue we are on level pegging with them. So, you know what? I say, I'm starting it early. I know I could be a prisoner of the moment on this one, and we could all kind of fall flat second half of the season. But I'm putting in there now. This is my case. This is why I think you should do it. If we fall, you know, if we come off the tracks in the next 5 games, then I'm buggered. but
let's it's make or break, isn't it? These next 4 or 5 games. Yeah. We either win 2 out of 4 and draw 1, we've got a chance. If we for some reason to lose all 4, dream's over.
Yeah.
It's that big.
And I just think there's still plenty of football to play, don't get me wrong. But we just can't consistently show that we're winning the games we need to win, and even in the games that are tricky, we're putting on a good show. And I don't think we can ask for much more. So, yeah, don't have to commit today, but have I sold either of you two on this with my 3-point presentation?
Well, you can't argue with the 3 points raised in this debate.
There's just a long way to go.
Yeah, I mean, look at the, when you said about Semedo, Semedo was lined up before he came in and Nuno'd him. That was the problem there. But Kilman represent, we called it anyway. And I found a tweet where I from last season where I said, where I said that if we had a defence as consistent as Kilman, we would be in the top 10. That's what I put. I tweeted that last season, last March. So we were there from the start.
There from the start. And now, yeah. Little these Dan pretenders. And Luke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why aren't you there with me? So be here with the start with me on this.
Yeah, we can. I think we can agree in principle.
Okay, I'll take an agreement in principle on this one.
Ask us again after the four games, and then I'll give you either a yes or a no.
I'll come back. We'll come back to this at the end of the month. At the end, I say end of the month, end of February. See where we're at. See if my points still stand. Because I reckon if we catch up with West Ham, you know, that's another manager ticked off the list. The only one, maybe Antonio Conte, if Spurs do an absolute run, maybe. But I think just giving it to Pep, what are we proving there?
Mm.
You know, that's sort of my thought process, and let's look a bit deeper. So, yeah, we'll see where we are in time with that one. Speaking of time, it's everyone's favourite time. It's Traore time. Never not in the news, is he at the moment? I mean, it feels like Wolves are close to agreeing something with Spurs at the moment. I think by the sounds of it, there have been reports that Spurs put in a bid of 15 million, which was laughed out of town. It's got to be a joke bid, right? Like, or just saying that you've done something just for the sake of it.
Yeah. It's almost like what we did with Botman in the summer.
Yeah.
we bid. Did we take the effort that they said no? That kind of thing. That pledging is part of his salary for the common goal. Brilliant gesture.
Yeah, so the other thing that has been used around this week is he's pledging 1% of his salary to Common Goal, which is a social action movement around sort of fighting racism in football. And, you know, genuinely, like, we talk a lot about football's not always being that great, but, you know, I think that's a really good sort of course to be part of for him personally.
Yeah.
In terms of, I guess, other transfer news, so there has been, there's two interesting tidbits for me. So, firstly, we've got players going out, and there is a link on this. So, we've got Leonardo Campana, who has joined up with David Beckham. So, his loan move from Grasshopper Zurich has been cancelled. He's now gone over to America. Do you think he'll ever really play for Wolves, Stu? I mean, they've got an option to buy, but...
Nah, of course not. I don't think he was ever going to, like, Renat Dadashoff and friends. They're never going to play, are they?
The Chelsea model, isn't it? Like, yeah. Where they're just trying to almost, as bad as it sounds, we're just trying to make money out of these players. And if they happen to be half decent, then great. They'll get a chance, maybe, but... The reality is that's the end goal, is to make a bit of cash.
I mean, I was going to say for Campana personally, teaming up with going to play in Miami, Kim, you got to have a bit of that. Like, I mean, I don't think it's probably much quality to bring up Wolves, but, you know, Wolverhampton to Miami is not too bad going, is it?
Well, it's better than Grasshoppers, isn't it?
you tell that to your boy. I'm scared I'm going to get the pronunciation wrong here. Kawabe,
yeah.
Yeah, we'll go for that. Who has signed from Wolves from Grasshopper and is now back over at Grasshopper as well. So, you know, it's good enough for him. You know, it could be good. I can see it's all right. Very clean, I've heard. That's all I know about it. But
it's not Miami, though, is it? Come on.
Nah, it's not. And I mean, let's be honest, have a look at Campana. He's going to enjoy being in Miami.
Yeah.
With Bex? Wow. Yeah.
And you know, Phil Neville?
Is he still there?
Yeah, I don't think he's been sacked yet.
Oh, I was going to say, because I know they were dreadful for a time. And lastly, I've put up Toti Gomez because it seems unlikely that Wolves are going to send him back, or even actually, to be honest, sign a centre-half this transfer window, which, to be honest, I think we're all sort of okay with now, knowing that he's come back and he's bedded in. He's going to make things slightly difficult for Sace second half of the season. Sanderson might go back on loan. The rumours are.
We've got Sace, Sanderson. We've got Marcel and Dendonka, who can all play there now.
Yeah.
None of which will get in the team anyway now with the how the three are playing. Even Sace, is Sace actually going to get back in, do we reckon, when he comes back? Because Gomez has been outstanding in the first two matches he's played, hasn't he?
I mean, he's not, you know, he's not immediately recalled someone like Willy Bolly times this season. So I don't think Sace could have too many complaints if he has to wait a couple of weeks.
Well, it depends how far they go as well. I mean, if they get through again, then we could be without. I mean, he's not going to come straight back in after the Cup of Nations anyway, is he? You'd think he'd give him a bit of a rest with the travelling alone. So I think if Toti Gomez lines up against Arsenal, I think then Sace has got a bit of a battle on his hands, because if he's got the shirt, and it's his to lose at that point. I mean, I wouldn't say he's been outstanding, but he hasn't done anything wrong, which is half the battle as a defender. I mean,
been outstanding. He was outstanding yesterday. He was the best centre-back out of all three of them yesterday. Not that the other two were bad, but he was brick wall yesterday.
I think yesterday he started to bring the ball out a bit, which he didn't do on his debut, obviously. Well, you kind of understand that because, well, he's come from playing in the Swiss League to playing against decent opposition, making his debut from nowhere and then playing that well. I think, well, we all saw the video of him being like a Portuguese Kilman, how he brings the ball out of defence. He started to kind of, there was hints of that yesterday.
He looks composed to me. Yeah,
he's so comfortable on the ball, considering how young he is as well. It's like nothing fazes him. It's amazing.
But I mean, I was going to say, we talked about Grasshopper Zurich quite a bit, and particularly with Gomez, feel like they're losing out on him. The other interesting bit of news I saw related around Wolves is, again, we talked about that loan strategy and sort of having a bit of and having a feeder club out there. There has been a change to the loan limits that FIFA are enforcing, so it's much more on a global scale. But essentially, from next season, they're going to have a maximum of 8 international loan signings in and out of a club next season. And then the season afterwards, it's going to go to 7. And then by season after that, it's going to go to 6, and then so on and so on. So, in about 3 years' time, you can only send out 6 players out on loan. There's also going to be a limit about the amount of players you can have going to and from one club. So I believe from next season, it's going to be 3 players. So we could only send, let's say, 3 players out to Grasshopper Zurich. So I think it might be a case we potentially have more than one club in our little posse, in our gang. So I've done a bit of research, which is never a good thing. So Wolves have this, is it official relationship we've got? You know, like on Football Manager, where you get to select feeder club? Or is this still like handshakes from behind the back sort of thing?
Yeah, it's an informal agreement.
Yeah, it's in everyone's best interests.
Yeah.
Okay, so can you name all the players who have gone on loan to Grasshopper Zurich from Wolves? Now, if I've done this correct, which we all know I haven't, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 over the past, I think, 2 or 3 seasons.
Well, Gomez, there's your one.
I mean, 3 of them should get quite easily because
Leo Bonatini.
Yes.
Conor Ronan.
Yes.
Did one of the Samson didn't go, did he?
Did that Daddy Shelf go?
Yeah, Daddy Shelf went.
This isn't as bad as Little Dan's quizzes, man. God.
I know, but mine's like grounded in, you know,
in reality.
Yeah.
These are players that no one cares about.
So far, we said Dadashov, Ronan, Bonatini,
Gomez,
yeah.
The goal we've just mentioned as well.
Oh, yeah, you said Campana, didn't you?
Yeah.
Did you say the other one?
The other one.
Yeah. Okay, so I think you've got three left.
Three.
So I'm just going to quietly check just to make sure he did actually play, and good people at Transfer Market didn't, you know, screw me over.
There was one went over with Conor Rowden, didn't he? I know that much. I'm trying to think who it was. Was he doing one on his own? This is annoying.
Rich, these are the players that no one cares about. Come on.
How dare you? How dare you say that? I know
we only care when, apart from Gomez now, obviously we care
when
now.
They're good. You only care because they're good. Okay. I feel really sad for them now. Okay, do you want me to give you them? So, I think you Boller, who's out on loan, I believe, at the moment.
Oh, the defender, yeah.
Yeah. Ming Yang Yang.
Of course.
Oh, God, yeah.
how little we knew him. And last one, Stu, which I think you're going to kick yourself, because he did, I think he's over at the moment currently. All I'm going to say is Marty McFly. Oscar Burr.
Is he?
I'd forgotten about him.
He's over there.
No.
Yeah, he went over in 2021.
And so how many times has he played?
10 games. No goals. Aww. Yeah. Two games. Yeah. No. You'll still find him.
He was a bit rubbish. He weren't great.
He was. No. But he could have a nice little career over there, you know.
Ain't no Semedo, though, is he?
No.
If it wasn't for Oscar Boo, we'd never got promoted. Just remember that.
We're still going with that.
Yeah. The gulliest hole.
Okay, fair enough. Right, shall we wrap this show up with some questions from Twitter Corner? We have 5/6 today. Big thanks for everyone who's tweeted us in. It's at Wolves Fancast. Also, if you're not on Twitter, just feel free to drop us an email as well on it. podcast@wolvesfancast.com as well. Okay, so first up, we have in no particular order, one from Pink Sacrificer, which is an interesting Twitter handle. He asks, is Dele Alli an acceptable trade for Traore? I mean,
No.
Do
you know what I'm sick of seeing? All of these crap Tottenham players getting sort of dangled in our face. It's like, no, I actually wouldn't take any of the, apart unless you're going to give me Sonny, then I wouldn't take any of them. So we want cash up front to spend on decent players, not Spurs dropouts.
I mean, you can't even, I mean, money is not a good enough trade with Dele Alli, that a player, the state of him. So, I mean, no, absolutely not.
I mean, my thing, when I saw this, I've seen it banded around a couple of times when you're saying, oh, 12 million plus, whoever. You don't really see lots of player swaps. It's not really a dumb thing, is it? Historically, around sort of, well, English football, it's not a big thing.
Sanchez to Man United was the last one I could think of.
Yeah. I mean, you could claim that Hoover from Liverpool towards was sort of part of a swap, but I think that's technically two separate deals in the end,
yeah.
I think. But again, it's not like it's really common. I do think it's there is a degree of football manager in it, and like, but I do find it kind of quite interesting, to be fair, that you say we all kind of, you know, we do measure up players a bit, don't we? And, you know, part of me has like a bit of the NFL trading system in my head when we think about it. We're like, oh, it's X amount and you know, you can have this player as well. But actually, it doesn't really work like that in football. I think it happens
it makes
more
it complex, doesn't it? I think it just makes it too complex. We just want 25 million to spend for Traore, and then we can spend it elsewhere, not on any Tottenham rubbish.
It seems almost like a throwback, like player managers that you don't see anymore.
Yeah.
It's that kind of era.
Yeah. I have the same thing with player coaches as well. Like, it's not a hugely abundant thing in elite football, but it still happens. Okay, Paul Wharton, regular contributor to Twitter Corner, asks, is 3-5-2 now the default way to go against all teams with a three-man midfielder and sort of sacrifice a forward in doing so? I guess it sort of depends on the team we play. I completely understand why he did it against Brentford. It will be interesting to sort of see how often we use it without Rolls' absence and against sort of three-man midfielders as well.
It depends, doesn't it? As you say, it depends on the team. And I still think really we're at our best when we play three up top, like 3-4-3, especially at home. I'm not a massive fan of... I think away it works in terms of when we don't want to get out overrunning midfield. And I'm still not convinced Dendonka's a great third option, but there we go. But I would still think 3-4-3 generally, if we want to really go out and attack the game. 3-5-2 is okay if it's a tough away game against a better team or like a shithouse team, I guess, like Brentford.
I mean, it doesn't have to be like yesterday with Dendonka. You could have the other man in midfield being like a 10 or whatever. You could have it that way, and in that case, I pretend to be perfect in that role. So rather than up front in a two, so it all depends on personnel as well. I mean, Raul and Hwang could play as a front two. And I said this on Twitter a while ago when they were saying, "Oh well, if Traore is sold, then we haven't got enough wingers." All well, even though we stocked full of them, well, we don't necessarily have to if we're going to be playing with wing backs as much of a focal point as we think we're going to be. Like we thought when Large came in and how well both of them played yesterday, you don't really need wingers anyway. So it works from that point of view. So
they're inverted forwards anyway, aren't they, really? They're not out-and-out wingers. That's why Traore doesn't really fit anyway.
Well, it's one of the reasons, but so I'll get into that again.
Okay. So next sort of two we've got, I've kind of merged them into one in a way. Jamie Walters and David Landucci have sort of kind of posed similar-ish questions, but it's around sort of, would you rather get to the FA Cup final or have a guaranteed Europa League place / FA Cup win or top four finish?
These questions hurt my head. FA Cup win, you get into Europa League though, don't you?
So I think FA Cup win or top four finish. So that's Champions League, isn't it? I'm thinking.
Yeah. But then you've still got the cup though, haven't you? And you've got, although it's not like the elite away, like the elite teams you're playing in Europe, you've still got those. So I'd go for the FA Cup win on that question on the right.
FA Cup all day long.
It's a trophy.
You're up for the cup, so it's...
Exactly. I couldn't care less about any of that stuff. If you win the FA Cup, you get into Europe that way anyway. Yeah, it's Europa League, what we know and love. You win the Europa League, you get Champions League anyway. So just to that, there's your answer. Yeah. Although, I did see a thing about Spain wanting boosters on their on your vaccination pass now. So I might have to bow down to them if it happens.
You see an influx of vaccination rates happening because of whichever team finishes in Europe. It would be interesting. But look,
as long as it's not the Europa Conference, because I'm not about that.
Yeah, that feels murky, in my opinion. So,
somewhere in Israel on a Thursday.
Yeah, that feels less glam, to be honest, doesn't it? I mean, my thought process on this: league positions are temporary. Silverware's forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like when we finished seventh a few years back, you know, great. In 10 years' time, we'd remember the FA Cup final more, I think, or the fact we got into, you know, whatever. So, yeah, FA, winning the FA Cup over pretty much anything, to be honest. Right, last two, penultimate. Todd DeWitt, friend of the fan cast, what's the worst food you've had at an away ground?
Eating's cheating, so I don't know. I don't eat at away grounds.
Disgrace. Total disgrace.
Clearly. Stu saw me at United. I weren't eating anything.
You'd had that much inside you that day that
Kim has liquid lunches on away games.
I mean, there is an easy answer to this. I mean, actually, yeah, thanks to Todd for the that scarf there, Colorado wool scarf on the wall. Preston away ran about George the Dar era, that kind of when the shitty old stand was still there, and we got put in that paddock, and it went to half time because we were like getting in there because we'd found a chippy, so we had something from the chippy, and it was a Chinese chippy. Never seen anything like it before. A Chinese guy with a Scottish accent just blew my mind. Mental. So we got into the ground. Day everything beforehand, but half time was quite hungry, so went up and they said, hot dogs, and they didn't have any buns left. So it was literally just a sausage in a bag. And it was one of the rollover hot dog sausages as well, one of the rubber things in a bag. I said, oh, we've got some sauce. I said, well, it's not like eating bratwurst. You can't just eat it off a stick. But it was like literally like eating a Greg sausage roll in the paper basket, in the paper bag that it comes in. It was a terrible experience.
Could I have not given you a tray?
No, the day I've already left. All they had was literally sausages and bags.
Or like fish and chip paper.
Oh no, this was in the ground. The chippy was separate. Yes, sausage there's in a bag at Preston.
I feel like there's gotta be a better solution there.
Don't eat at away grounds.
Coffee cup. Split it in two, put it in a coffee cup. I don't know. Like break it into like little chunks, like it's for a small toddler, and give them a fork and eat like, I don't know, little bits. Like I'm spitballing here because this is hurting the problem solution driven mindset I have to live on a day to day basis. Right. This isn't actually not a question because I've seen we've had a couple more pop in, but I won't be able to put them on here. But Jamie Walters, this is re snapshot. Who's more insufferable? Thomas Frank. Or Jurgen Klopp.
Oh no,
that's difficult, isn't it? I mean, I'm saying
which one of your neighbours do you hate the most? Yeah, it's like which one of your neighbours do you hate the most? Both of them.
Klopp can back up being a twat by the things he's won. So by that logic, it's got to be Thomas Frank. Ideally, they'd both be. We'd never see them in English football
bitter
again.
Bitter and twisted, aren't they? Yeah. Honestly, they're the worst losers ever. We're going to say Thomas Frank because it's like fresh in it. But if we were to play Liverpool next week, and although we're not, and then Jurgen Klopp to just have a strop like he usually does, it'd be Jurgen Klopp. So they're both bad as each other, aren't they?
Eddie Howe, I'd rather have a whole night out with Eddie Howe than be even in the same division as Eddie.
No. Oh,
that would be a bleak night out, Stu.
Exactly. This is the point. That would be more entertaining than spending any time with them two arseholes.
No, Jurgen Klopp would be quite fun.
Depends if not if they've lost.
True.
I can't imagine any manager's fun to go out with if they've lost, Stu. That's a better question. Which manager's most? Duncan Ferguson. 1,000% that's.
But I think Bruno would be boring to go out with. He ain't exactly life and soul.
It'll just tell you how shit it is at work. Like, not investing in me. You know, so tell you what, they gave me a chance. I can tell them what we all need to do. Like, put down the beer, Bruno.
So when he said today that he's given him a day off because they need time away from her listening to him.
Yeah. He just hasn't got a filter, has he? I love it. Right. Right. The actual last two, just because I see them pop up on my phone, is a podcast called Cage Fighting have tweeted us, which is just seen any good films lately.
I'm assuming that wasn't you, Stu, who tweeted it whilst mid-pod. I'm trying to think if I actually
said I barely watch films. That's a fascinating fact about me. I don't watch films, so I'm passing on this.
You need to actually watch a film.
No, I just watch just Netflix, just series.
Yeah, well, there you go. Then throw that in. That
I was going to say, we can expand it to a Netflix show. I watched... Oh, crikey. I'm trying to think. I actually watched The Eternals last weekend, which I didn't watch in cinema, which I thought was...
Shit.
So, yeah.
The worst film out of all 27 of them. Easily.
Yeah. We're going to tangent a bit, but I felt there were some really good themes within it, but it should have been... I don't know why it wasn't a Disney Plus show. Keep the same tone, but you could have fleshed it out over a lot more time and it would have been worth it. There's been quite a few Harlan Corbin TV shows on Netflix. I think I've binged what I watched one with Michael C. Hall a couple of years ago. There's been a couple with Richard Armitage on recently as well, which I've binged, but I was like, oh, middle class people having problems and killing people. which is the crux of most of, I think, his books as well, from what I've seen. So maybe go check him out if you want something lighthearted to watch. I don't know. It's not actually that lighthearted, but it's quite easy.
I've just finished You on Netflix.
I've watched the first two seasons of that.
It's a bit unrealistic. I got a bit bored towards the end because it's just unrealistic. So I wouldn't really recommend it. Next on my list is, what's the Ricky Gervais thing?
Oh.
The Afterlife, yeah. I've seen some good reviews on that, so a bit of lighthearted.
But it's not lighthearted.
It's not really, but like, you know what I mean. It is banter still, through parts of it.
Yeah, well, since I spoke to the two of them last week, I haven't seen another film, but I have seen Afterlife, and it did make me sob.
Yeah, I've watched the first season of it. I've not.
It's still funny though, in parts. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't watched the latest ones because, I know I will sob. Considering
you need to be in the right emotional state, and I'm building myself up to it.
Yeah, I have fully watched the new season of Queer Eye, though, Stu.
Yes, well done.
There we go. So that is good and probably made. I don't know if this season made me cry. I watched a couple of the ones from the first season. That got me emotional. I feel like I'm just going to start. What someone's going to like do a question now? What TV shows hasn't Rich cried over? It's like, is it a good TV show that hasn't?
If they ever come here, you are absolutely being nominated for a makeover, 100%. Look at the state of you.
I've had a very stressful evening. That's all I'm going to say.
You look like... Actually, I want to bring it up again because it's a great film. Tick, Tick, Boom, with Andrew Garfield. His hair is as insane as yours is now.
I will take a comparison to Andrew Garfield. There. Said it. You know what? It will get cut at some point soon, but the fact it's kind of curling over my ears, I think, is sort of a tipping point.
I remember your excuse before was when we were in lockdown, was obviously the hairdressers were shut.
My current excuse, and I think this is sort of valid. So in the next 8 weeks, I've got my wife's 30th birthday, my mum's 60th, and we've got a family wedding. So I'm like trying to time it right. So it's probably going to get cut in like the next week or so. So it kind of stretches what, so it's like a nice length for all the events without it being, you know, this.
That's a proper girly comment.
I know. I'm just so organized in every facet of my life, as you guys know. But if one thing I've got a level of control over, right, I'm just gonna get my hair cut. It'll probably be next Thursday, I reckon, is what I'm thinking off the top of my head, if I can squeeze it in at work. Right. One last question, because fuck it, why not? We're already an hour and a half in. But last question. It's from Tara, who I think is big in with cage fighting. How many marshmallows can you fit in your mouth?
When I tried it, I think I got a bit...
You've tried it? Yeah,
Yeah. Dave tried this as well. Former Fancast founder, David Evans. It's harder than you think, and then there's a definition of marshmallows as well, and
I don't even like marshmallows that much.
That's not the point. That's not the question. It's of the large ones, it was 10. So
I was thinking, I reckon I could go 6. That was mine of the big, like I'm thinking like campfire ones.
Well, I've only got a little mouth, so probably 5.
Probably good a places for Eddie to end the show.
Before the hair comments come out, I'll put this up there. I've served my time with bad hair.
I don't think I'm ready to kind of fully join Bold Club though. That's my only thing. So I think it's gonna just have we're just gonna have to cope with, as Stu would say, single wallpaper through my through the top of my hair.
Just go and get an Alex band or a Neves tennis thing for next week.
I was going to say, I'll nick one of my daughters.
You'd be the spitting image, Rich.
If you got
an Alice band, people would literally be like, start to call you Ruben.
To be fair, I've been called worse. And now I can always stop playing with my hair on the YouTube show, guys. But we'll be back. I don't quite know when, because we're not playing next weekend, are we? So, well, probably time to split in a...
Norwich, we are.
We're back in Norwich. Of course, I'm getting my dates all mixed up here, guys. Sorry. We'll be back for Norwich.
Yeah, in 2 weeks.
We're on the
23rd.
Yeah. Right, so it's... Yes. So it's international break this weekend.
I'm getting my dates mixed up.
We'll do our preview review show, Norwich. And if I get the time, we might try and do something next weekend as well, if we can do. Big thanks to everyone who's listened this week, as always. Make sure you keep up to date with all things Wolves on our socials. That's at Wolves Fancast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Big shout out to 90 Min Football Family Network, as well as Pixel Yeti Media as well. Until next time, it's goodbye from Kim.
Bye-bye.
It's goodbye from Stu.
Just think that Kim has got a small mouth, apparently. Try.
And it's goodbye for me. See you next time.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?